KACU's Texas Standard fans will recognize our next guest. W.F. Strong brings his unique brand of storytelling to public radio airwaves on a regular basis. Welcome to KACU.
Thank you.
And maybe you should say welcome back.
Yes, it's good to be back.
I think a lot of people will be surprised that this was your home for a bit. Mm-hmm. You actually graduated from Abilene Christian University.
Yes. And I worked at this very radio station when I was in college, and that's kind of cool.
It is.
Kind of cool to be back in front of the mic here where I started.
We hear that often. We have had a lot of people that have used this as a launching pad. Mm-hmm. It's interesting for us to hear that W.F. Strong is one of them.
Well, I'm honored to have that recognition and honored to be back.
Now, have you been able to be back and visit Abilene much?
No, actually, this is the second time I've been in Abilene since I graduated in 1977. I came through about 10 years ago. I was with a couple other people. We were just driving, and I said, let me swing by the college. And we came through, and I was absolutely blown away by the growth. And so that was 10 years ago. But this is the first time I've actually been on campus since I graduated in 1977. So I am, again, absolutely mystified by the incredible progress that's obviously happened here.
Well, you'll see much more as you're here throughout the weekend, I'm sure. I wanted to ask, as a storyteller, did you have a remembrance or a story of Abilene that you might want to share?
Sure. Well, I have many stories, and I have a few I can't tell you. but I think, especially as I'm here now on campus, the thing that I remember most is the great storytellers who were my professors. One in particular that I just love, I loved him, was Dr. Rex Kiker. And so a lot of old guard Abilenians will know him. But he was a minister and he was a professor. And he taught a class called Great American Oratory. And he was so gifted as an orator that he just kept us spellbound. I remember very well, it was on a Tuesday-Thursday schedule from 1 to 2:30, and he was one of those rare professors that when the bell rang at 2:30, you were sad. You wanted him to keep going.
That's
an after-lunch class. And then the subject was an historical subject, but he brought Daniel Webster to life. He told us about the beauties of Lincoln's rhetoric, and most people would find that a dull subject, but he breathed life into it in such a way that we just wanted to stay and listen to him.
Oratory, you mentioned the word gift. Oratory is a gift, I think.
Yes. But the gift must be honed and shaped and nurtured. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people born with the basic gift, but I like to say like a runner. You can have the great athleticism, but if you don't work it and if you don't get out and develop it and have someone help you nurture it, you won't get the greatest benefit from the gift.
So you left Abilene and you have done a number of different things. So you're a professor.
Yes.
You're an author and a storyteller. You're working with public radio stations as, you know, part of the Texas Standard. I guess I'm curious about how your start here really sent you in those directions.
Well, what my start here did was, for one thing, because I was exposed to so many great professors, like B.E. Davis was a great communications professor here, and he inspired me to want to do important things in the field of communication. But he also made me want to be a professor. I saw all these various professors like Kiker and B.P. Galloway and Wendell Broom, and they were so encouraging and nurturing and inspirational that I said, I want to be like them. I want to one day have the kind of impact on young minds that they've had on me. And so that's why I went from here to University of North Texas to a communication speech comm program. And then from there, I went to eventually, you know, a few years later, I went to do a doctorate at the University of Arizona in essentially rhetoric, oral rhetoric. And so the driving force has always been toward storytelling and the great impact that great communicators can have. But it started here from the influence of these marvelous professors that I was around. And then, I did my master's thesis on Twain, and I did my dissertation on Twain, but on his speaking, not on his writing so much. I remember I had a professor here in the English department, Dr. Ewing, who knew of my love for Twain when I was a sophomore, and he invited me to sit in on the graduate seminar he was teaching on Twain. Most universities, they don't do that. You know, that was a great honor for him to choose me as a 19-year-old and said, you know, you might enjoy this graduate seminar I'm doing. And it was the small nature of the school that provided that sort of, powerful nurturing that I certainly wouldn't have gotten at UT.
You know, it seems like so much of the time these days, schools are narrowing down their focus and losing a little bit of that liberal arts thrust that really was a big part of campuses so long ago.
I'm very sad to see the liberal arts being whittled away at.
Yeah.
I've seen many universities these days, for instance, in a world where we're trying to encourage diversity and diversity of understanding, many universities are getting away from the old language requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't need a foreign language. Yet at the same time, we're teaching globalization, but you don't need a language. So I don't understand it. Everything seems in conflict often. It's like the airlines giving us smaller seats when we keep getting bigger.
Well, you're back in town this weekend
for
the Abilene Public Library's West Texas Book Festival. Mm. Your book has been number one bestseller on Amazon's Texas category.
Yes.
What do you think captured people about this book?
Texans love Texas. That's
really
it. I would love to say, you know, it's my brilliant writing or my humor, but really it's Texans love Texas. And this kind of hit a sweet spot. It allowed them to perhaps learn something that they didn't know. Everything's short and tight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's four pages. It's not a great commitment. You can skip around and read about Judge Roy Bean or the Alamo or whatever melts your butter. It's there. It's not a great commitment to any one of these little vignettes, but each one is well packaged and interesting, I think. The other part is I have an audio book. I mean, it's the same book, but I did the audio book, and that has been incredibly popular too because people have written to me to say, you know, I was listening to your book as I drove through West Texas, and they say, and it was magnificent because the ambiance of West Texas provided the perfect backdrop for the book. And so that's a great compliment, and one has empowered the other, you might say. It's really an oral book. You know, I start out when I do a story for Texas Standard. What I do first is compose it orally. I talk it out. I think my wife says, you know, if people see you driving around town, they're going to think you're crazy because I'm in my pickup and I'm talking out my commentary. And then after I talk it out and make it oral, then I put it on the page to see it and to improve it. And then I go back and voice it. So it's a very oral process. Mm-hmm. And the book is just the written version of these oral vignettes.
So is there one that you hear the most about that people really connect to?
Two of them that people mention a great deal are really my personal stories more than the – I mean, there's some like the story of the Nisei, the Japanese warriors who saved the Texans in World War II. A lot of people are very moved by that. But one that I have that people seem to love a lot is called Uncle Dale. And then the other one is My Valentine, which is about my relationship with my five-year-old daughter. And so I'm one of these lucky guys who had a daughter come along when I was 60, and my first daughter. And so it has been a whirlwind of an education for a guy like me who grew up with all brothers and had only boys until she came along. So it has been magical.
Are you, I mean, you're a pretty busy guy. Are you working on another book?
Yes, I have another one almost ready. I'm hoping that we'll get it out probably in 9 months or so, something like that. And then I also have a novel that I often refer to it as my alleged novel. But I have that about half done. And so after I do this next book, I want to do that one.
That's a pretty different type of writing.
Yes, it is. It is a different one. I just want to. To me, I feel like I won't be a real writer until I write a novel. That's an exceptionally challenging thing. Most of what I've done is either autobiographical, For instance, the title of my book is a subtitle is Some of Them Are True. Mm-hmm. Stories from Texas, Some of Them Are True. And so there are those people who will say, which ones are true? And I say, well, you're not from Texas, are you? Because if I, if you're from Texas, I don't have to explain this. That we're, it's tongue in cheek. You know, we exaggerate things, and I'm just accepting that idea that we have exaggeration here. And I exaggerate the folklore and some of that stuff. But for the most part, I'm trying very hard to be accurate. I want to tell, you might read it, you might see that line as amazing but true. You know, stories from Texas, amazing but true. And then the folklore part, no, I'm sorry, not the folklore, but my personal stories about my mother or my daughter or Uncle Dale, who wasn't my real uncle, he was just a neighbor. But those are also true, but they're, you know, autobiographical and seen through the eyes of a grown-up's memory of being a child. So naturally there could be some embellishment there.
Mm-hmm.
But for the historical stories where I'm writing about the Nisai or I'm writing about Judge Roy Bean, I'm trying to tell you the truth, but I'm also trying to find an angle that's interesting that you don't know about. I'll give you an example. My brother, Redneck Dave, whom I refer to sometimes in my stories because he's a great storyteller, and he never went to college, blue-collar guy, a whole different world, but he's wonderful because he has such authenticity as a guy who worked in the oil fields, and you know there's no pretense in the man. He just lays it on the line. It's refreshing. But anyway, he told me one day. He said, you know, I was looking at your book, and the problem with the book is that you haven't told the Texas story.
So what is it?
The Alamo.
Okay.
He said, you haven't told the Texas story about the Alamo.
Now, I don't know if you can do that in four pages.
I know. Well, I had the, in the book, I have some references to it, but I hadn't actually had a whole commentary devoted to that. So I told him, well, it's been done 3,000 times. I don't know what I can possibly add to it. And then one day, and this isn't in the book, this is in a later commentary that I did last year. But one day I just started thinking about it. I said, who was at the Alamo, really? Who were the defenders? What were the demographics of those men? And I started looking into it, and there was a story there to me. It was new. It was something I didn't know, so I assumed a lot of other people wouldn't know. So I try to find the angle that brings news to people to say, look at it this way, or maybe you've never thought of it this way before. This will be interesting if we will look at it from this angle together.
It's a good talent for a storyteller.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. So I try to develop it. And then a lot of ideas come to me from just, random questions that people will ask. Kind of like my brother, you haven't done, and my wife once asked me, she said, what does the word maverick mean? And, I told her, well, it's unbranded cattle. It refers to unbranded cattle. She said, but how did it come to mean that? And, I knew a little bit about the background, but I got kind of curious and I started looking into it, and I found that story had more layers than I could keep up with. Just really a wonderful story. So I wrote it up. And, it's in the book, and the whole background is there. And I found out he was much misunderstood and was a great Texas patriot, and most people don't know that. So I'm trying to provide a little education as I go.
So I mentioned the book festival.
Yes.
And there are a number of events all weekend that people mm-hmm. can participate in. One of them that caught my attention was Saturday morning. There's a 10 books for a desert island. I'm curious what you would take to a desert island to read.
I'd have a book called Everything You Need to Know to Survive on a Desert Island. That would be my favorite book. I don't know anything about that. I'm with you. I'm curious as to what it's about. I'm going to have to attend it so I can learn in case I'm ever stranded.
Do you like to read other authors?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, that's why I got into this, really. The storytelling was incidental because at some point I realized that a lot of people I knew had no real knowledge of the great literature of Texas. They had heard of McMurtry, but they didn't know what he'd written. Mm. And so what I wanted to do was to get on the radio, and that's what I did. I went to the NPR station. I said, what I'd like to do is to do little vignettes about Texas literature and share some excerpts from that literature to get people reading Texas Lit. And they said, well, okay, we'll try it. We'll give you a shot. And so I started sharing some bits from McMurtry and Elmer Kelton from San Angelo, just little snippets to tell them about the book and why they should read it, and to try to present those little excerpts from the book in a way that was lively and animated and would seduce them into wanting the book. And that's how it started. And then I went from there to things like, well, let's look at Texas cultural iconic things like Whataburger and Dr. Pepper, and how did they become icons, mm-hmm. Blue Bell, et cetera. So it kind of diversified itself over time, but at my core element, core interest is always really the literature and the stories within that literature.
Do you have a particular favorite in the literature?
Well, I think probably The Last Picture Show is McMurtry's, one of his first books. That's one of my absolute favorites. And Lonesome Dove. Now, Lonesome Dove is, to me, the kind of Iliad and Odyssey of Texas culture, just a beautiful work. And again, the miniseries is splendid. One of the most watched miniseries of all time, second most actually. But the book is just unbeatable.
And that's usually true, you know, between a screen version of a story,
sure,
and the book or the series of books.
But I will give this to, it's the best miniseries adaptation of a novel I know of. You know, just beautifully done. And the only reason it's beautifully done is because it was done as a miniseries. If they tried to do it as a movie, forget
sure.
it. And even Robert Duvall, when he was making it, he said to his fellow actors, that we're making the Godfather of Westerns here, boys. He knew that they were working, they were making great art. And it has gone around the world. Robert Duvall talked about being down in Argentina at a ranch down there, and they had a copy of a CD of Lonesome Dove, I think there's two of them, but they had worn it out. They'd worn it out watching it on this ranch down there, and asked him if he could get him another copy.
That's awesome.
Yes, it is.
I'm curious, as you were preparing to come up for the book festival, mm-hmm. what were you most looking forward to?
I was looking forward to coming and reconnecting with Abilene, because, you know, when you come to a place where you had four beautiful years, and it's already happened. As I was driving across town, I recognized things and remembered events that I had forgotten just by the stimuli of the city. Saying, oh, yes, I remember I was there once. I ate there. And you know, it all comes back. As I saw the stadium, I was remembering one of the things I loved about being here as a student was Wilbert Montgomery was in my class, and he was one of the finest athletes ever to come out of here. He went on to become a Philadelphia Eagles running back and top running back in the NFL, had a glorious career. But when I watched him run here in small college, I mean, it was poetry. It was slam poetry is what it was. It was hard and fast and beautiful to watch. I remember thinking, as I once watched him run from the 25-yard line in to make a touchdown. They just threw him a pass, and it was so fast. He was there, boom, you know, 2 seconds, shoo, he's in the end zone. I'd never seen a human being move that fast, and it showed you the level of world-class athleticism in this guy who was playing in the small league, really, NAIA. We were champs. We were national mm-hmm. champs 2 years then. So I love that memory of watching him play. He's retired now, but still, it's great to have that memory of him as my classmate.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
W.F. Strong, thank you so much for coming into KACU.
Appreciate it.
W.F. Strong's storytelling is featured regularly on the Texas Standard, which airs weekdays at 10 a.m. on KACU. His book, Stories from Texas, Some of Them True, delves into the state's cultural heritage. Local readers have a chance to get their copy signed this weekend at the Abilene Public Library's West Texas Book Festival. I'm Heather Claiborne. This is KACU.